With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's up, everybody? It's Joe LaPuma. You're listening to the Complex Sneakers Podcast. As always, I'm joined by my two co-hosts. First up, my man, Matt Welty. How are you, buddy?
Here we are. Big day.
Woo, you're excited about this one.
In my zone.
Yeah, we got the Perrier. Go ahead, King. Go ahead. Just so the audience, we'll get into it, but I'm letting you lead this one, Welty. And then, of course, from Brooklyn, we don't know what house he's in because he switches houses like he switches sneakers. My man, Brendan Dunn.
Many different locations, many different pairs of shoes. I'm here. That's what matters. I'm happy for Welty. I'm happy for all of us. I'm excited for today's episode.
The best thing is that you're here and the feds didn't pick you up in the past week.
That's right.
Did anyone get in touch with you over the hit and
Nobody
run?
Nobody has contacted me about the hit and run. Hit and run is a dramatic way to describe it, about the mirror that I blew off someone's car in Brooklyn last weekend. Actually, somebody who I know in the neighborhood did call me and then hang up quickly, and I thought maybe it was about that incident. But he never followed up, so I think I'm in the clear. But like I said, if anybody lost a mirror off their truck in Brooklyn in the past few weeks because I ripped it off while driving by in a U-Haul van, please let me know. If you can corroborate your involvement in the incident, I'm happy to compensate you.
Okay.
It's like a hit and done, right?
There he is.
I'm happy you said that, but I'm mad that it took you a week to, you know, we should have had that last week. Better late than never.
How was the weekend?
How was my weekend? What did I do? I think, you know what I did? I was in the city. It felt good. Yeah. We had a three-day weekend. I was back at Golden Diner, one of my favorite establishments. Nice to see those people once again. You know, just nice to be outside. Went to the museum.
You went to your old establishments, even though you got the Reebok deal? You haven't changed up yet? I'm waiting for the green bubble to come up when I text the group, so.
Yeah, still the same me.
Okay. Okay. Welty, what about you?
Weekend was good. Hung out with some Portuguese friends of mine in Newark, New Jersey. Went and ate some good food. Drank some sangria, some red wine.
Okay. What was the good food involved?
Had some pork chops with some cherry pepper sauce on top.
Okay, so hold on.
Some prosciutto, some bread, you know.
I would say that at the past 3 to 4 Italian restaurants I've been at, pork chops with cherry vinegar peppers is what I've ordered. And I think that's becoming my favorite. It has been for a while, but I think that's my favorite Italian dish. And I'm glad, Welty, that you're adopting it too. I think that's like the best fastball down the middle.
But Joe, Italian is this cultural right appropriation? Because Welty says he's eating it with Portuguese people.
No. He gets a pass. He has come a long way.
I think there might be cultural overlap. There.
He has come a long way from the Duane Reade prosciutto. Now he's talking about pork chops with cherry peppers. That's
growth.
And that's basically my order when I go out to these Italian places. So props to Welty. We're on the same wave, baby.
Joe, how was your weekend?
Weekend was good. I was in Long Island, low key. I did make a stop. I had lunch in Sayville, which doesn't mean much to you guys if you're not from Long Island.
What does it mean?
Nothing, actually. Really doesn't mean anything. And then I was bored, and me and my friend Rudy of Yao Ming getting stolen from the front of Finish Line fame. We have to mention it every single time. We decided to look up some baseball card shops and see if there were any in the area, and we drove like 15 minutes to this baseball card shop. And let me tell you, it was a mess. It was a mess. And I went in there.
You trying to get your Josh Luber on?
Well, I went in there and I was like, so my goal was not to go for valuable cards. It was just every card that I couldn't get when I was younger. And I used to remember going into like, I think there was a place called J&J's Dugout or something. Or J&D's Dugout. I can't remember. And I remember like Daryl Strawberry's rookie card. It must have been like $75. And I would just stare at it. I got it for $12 at this place.
The same exact card?
Same exact card. But then
that's a blessing.
I was asking, I mean, there was memorabilia all over the place, like action figures. They had like this Jordan Upper Deck pack that had like 10 packs of cards with like a Jordan cardboard cutout. I was like, how much is this? They're like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. So everything I was asking for, they don't know. And I was like, guys, you know that this like card thing is booming again.
Yeah,
I was
like, did it feel like they were cashing in? Were they aware of this? You know, Ben Baller is tweeting about
packs
of cards.
And I'm like,
4 minutes.
And you know me, I don't want to overstep, but I'm also like, hey, who can I talk to? Like, there's this thing going on.
Speak to the manager.
Well, it's just like you got like, I mean, it was like you had to step over things of memorabilia, and baseball cards. And I would be like, do you have a Lawrence Taylor rookie card? And they're like, oh, I'm not sure. The football cards are a mess. And then I got a Ken Griffey Jr. Upper Deck rookie card. I got a Mark McGwire rookie card. I got an Ozzie Smith rookie card and the Daryl Strawberry one. And then I hit up some people and I was like, so how do I know what they're worth? And basically the long and short of it, you have to get them graded or it's like
PSA, right? You texted Steve Aoki?
No, I was going to text Josh Luber, our friend. Our friend Josh Luber, I was going to text, and I didn't. But I did think about it. Apparently, you know, the grading system, I was like, well, it looks...
Are you going
to
send him off to get graded?
I don't think so.
You know what? I hold a little bit of a grudge against shops like that because there was one that I used to try and go to in the Bonner County Mall. Okay. In Sandpoint, Idaho. I can't recall the name of it. I want to say it was called Athlete's Choice, but I feel like that's a very generic sports wear store name, and maybe I'm conflating it with something else. But this was right when Pokemon cards first came out. I wasn't into the Magic just yet.
So you were hold on. I have to. You're going into a place called Athlete's Choice, and you're asking for Pokemon cards?
It's a sport, in a way. But... I wasn't asking. I was begging.
Do you consider Ash an athlete? Ashley.
Go ahead. Sorry, Doug.
Okay,
go.
We would go in there. You know, I was in fifth grade, I think, at the time, maybe fourth grade. We would go in there and we would hound the old guy with the mustache about the Pokemon cards, and he didn't have them in stock. And he finally was like, "Oh, I'm getting some soon." And I remember coming back 1 week after school. My mom's office was nearby, so we would walk to the mall, quote-unquote mall. It's a dead place. But he finally got the Pokemon cards. But the problem was he got these Topps versions of them. It wasn't the actual Pokemon trading card game. It was just these Topps cards with pictures of Pokemon on them. You can't imagine how incensed I was, but I still bought some.
Okay. That'll ruin your day. The wrong Pokemon cards will ruin your day, okay, if you're Brendan Dunn.
Did you grow your mustache as a tribute to the guy at the shop?
No, fuck that guy.
But yeah, so I went in and I'm like, you know, I'm looking for stuff. And then I'm like, hey, like, you know, I was a little short of like, hey, I'll come in one weekend and like organize this for you and we should talk about it. I didn't do that, but like, there's a lot of opportunity there.
Is this your version of going to a vintage sneaker store and digging stuff out of the basement?
So I left and I was like, you know what? This is like a bar rescue episode. You ever see Bar Rescue?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like, Rudy, this feels like
John Taffer.
Exactly. I was like, this feels like a Bar Rescue episode for cards. So we'll see. I took their business card, but I can't, as you guys know, I can't get into another thing. Like I can't start obsessing about baseball. I just can't.
That could be an awesome content idea. Just to throw it out there, you get a John Taffer of like sneaker resale, and he goes into these like independent consignment shops somewhere in like fucking Centerville, Ohio, and strains up their flip game.
Who's sponsoring it?
Home Depot.
Well, do we need a sponsor?
Restoration Hardware. Home Depot. Sneaker news. Anything in sneaker news?
I don't know. One thing I was going to say that was pretty awesome over the weekend. That was, I guess, a big moment. I don't know if you guys watched it. Was the Dave Chappelle acceptance speech?
Yes.
I did not see that. That was at the Emmys?
That was huge, where he was just like, next time, just shut the fuck up.
To his critics. Yeah.
I need a 4-second video of him just saying that so I can keep it on deck.
It was, that acceptance speech. He won Emmys. And then he was like, he had an Emmy. He was like, this isn't the new one. This is the old ones, right?
Yeah. And he's smoking a cigarette right on the middle of the stage. It was a pretty awesome moment. You know, there is sneaker news.
Yeah, what's sneaker news?
Sneaker shopping is back.
Sneaker shopping is back. We had Alicia Keys on the first episode that ran Monday. The reception got good reception. It was great to be back. She was awesome. We're going to try to put together a season as much as possible. We got a good one coming up Monday.
Very excited.
Have you screened it? Oh, you screened it.
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it yet. Welty have seen it. The intro I'm really excited about. And
it's a part two. Can we at least put that out
yes,
there?
Yes, it's a part two. And I think the guest delivered for sure. So, and then we'll see. You know, we're trying to put together a mini season. Obviously, everything's challenging, but it's been good to be back. And we'll see where it goes. Man, really not. Sneaker news, Fragment threes.
You texted us late last night, and Brendan hits me up and doesn't want to talk about more Kanye sneaker circles on the podcast. But here we are talking about it.
The unveil that he did.
Kanye
that.
West is leaking all the plans for the rest of the year. He even put the release dates out there a couple weeks back.
Yeah, he.
Imagine the people in Germany are like, "What is going on?"
Kanye though. You see the new office in Atlanta? I wonder if he took that photo there. The new office in Atlanta looks crazy with the 100-foot screen.
I don't know anything about that. There's a new Yeezy office?
I think it has the 100-foot screen. Remember that he was watching?
I thought that was in Wyoming.
Thought it was in Atlanta. I'm not sure.
The videos he's been tweeting out. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, we'd have to check it. But yeah, seems like there's a lot of Yeezys on the way, which our colleague Ben Felderstein is super excited about. Shout out to Ben.
I think the colorways are really good. There was all those 500s that are in multi-tone, like earth tonal colorways, but they're actually in colorways for once. It's not just like, hey, it's a gray shoe. It's it's a brown shoe. You're like, oh, it's purple and tan with a gum sole. You're like, oh, it's giving us a little something more.
Trying to look at what else we've seen in that sneaker headlines recently.
I do want to bring up Welty's Nike SB story. And I'll tell you, man. Reading that story brought me back. I know that we've been talking about SB for so long now, for the past 6 months or more. Yeah. And bringing that story brought me back to Special Sauce and Bayshore. And it really, like, the detailing from the store owners about how, Nike SB dunks were popping, but then you had to take kind of all the SKUs. And I just remember going in and seeing Blazers. And what was that silhouette? The FC?
Mm-hmm. FC, Angus, EQ, Zoom
exactly.
Trey,
like so many
URL,
but the Tiffany dunks that Brooklyn Dom spoke on, and that was a point of like a center point of the article. I called Special Sauce 4 times a day for the Tiffany dunks for a month. And I think I said on this podcast that I ended up with like a fake pair that someone from Complex sold me, a sales guy in the day. And then
can we snitch on them right now?
No,
right
we can't. Here? We can't. No, no, not on this platform.
Is it someone that I would know? Is it someone that I would
know? Neither of you would know.
Just put their name out there.
You sent the picture in the leather was wrinkled all funny where it's like you could just tell it's not real.
For the audience, I had the shoes and I knew that they were fake. And, you know, I'm at my house that I grew up in, and I'm staring at the Tiffany dunks. The other casualty of those Tiffany dunks in college, a girl I was dating had a cat, and the cat totally scratched the toe box.
That's
when they were fake. When they were new and when they were, I mean, still fake, but added on to the fakeness. But I was looking at the dunks the other day, and I'm like, I'm sending it to Dunn and Welty. Maybe there's a shot that they
can't tell.
Yeah, you
said, like, is there a chance? And we're like,
no. Right away, Welty said, no chance those are real.
Welty
no chance.
Dashed your hopes immediately.
The one thing I didn't put in the story, for those who haven't read it, it's on complex.com. A big reported story I wrote about like how shop owners dealt with and are dealing with our skate shop owners are dealing with the Madness Pine SB releases, because as we know, skate shops aren't like real sneaker shops that are used to releasing shoe week in and week out. So when you get a hype release at a skate shop, it just turns into like, I'll sell you these for twice as much money. I don't give a fuck. But the one full circle moment in my life on that was one of the guys I interviewed for this story, this guy Chris Rice, who owned the store Identity in Portsmouth. That's like the guy I used to buy SBs from back in the day. And like, I knew him, like, you know, I used to shop there, but like, I don't think back then, like, I ever told him my name and I was like, nobody. It's not like we like hung out together or anything. You know what I mean? So it was like, oh yeah, I remember you from the shop, but whatever. One of the other guys who used to work there used to come get Celtics jerseys off of me at Locker on the discount.
The one thing I didn't get, how did the LeBron 7 part fit in? A LeBron 7 or something ended up in a skate shop?
Yeah, because they were like selling, like Nike was like trying to test them between, do you want to be an energy store or do you want to be an SB store? So they were kind of like playing them off with like both accounts. And I remember walking in and like, he's like, yeah, the rep just dropped these off. And there's a pair of like LeBron 7s sitting in a skate shop. And I'm like, this is Brendan, because we spoke about it like that early on, where it's like Jordan 1s just got dropped off in skate shops. You know what right. I mean? Where it's kind of like a weird history of like during the SB era, Nike was trying to like just put LeBrons in the skate shops. So I'm like, that's really strange.
We always hear about going in. Oh, I miss going into stores and not knowing what the what were on the shelves. Honestly, that SB era, that was like, that was it for me, because I never knew the releases. I worked at Finish Line and I knew all the releases. The SBs, I didn't even know totally the different. Releases. And it just is like going to Special Sauce in Bayshore. I remember there was a Jewish deli right next to it, and I would get pastrami at the Jewish deli, a pastrami sandwich, and then I would walk past the window and just seeing the J-Rods, the first P-Rods with the elephant print elephant that print. Tinker did in the window, just sitting there and being like, wait, is this – do you have sizes? And they're like, yeah, and just buying them.
That's the biggest anticipation. I totally miss this moment of – nowadays, you buy everything online, basically. But number one, you wouldn't know it was in the store. You see the thing on the shelf. And then that, like, time in between asking him, do you have this in a size 11? And from the time he has to go back and tell you whether he has it or not, like, your whole life is kind of, like, unraveling before your eyes, whether you're going to get the shoes.
Just like, it was like, you know, some people get, they say, oh, the old heads always, the yesteryear of going into stores and not knowing what were on shelves. Trust me, when you have that feeling, it hits.
That's different. Exactly. Now you know how I felt with the Pokemon cards.
Exactly.
I mean, I thought that was sneakers, but that was, you know.
Exactly. And then when it was the Topps cards, energy. It was like they didn't have your size in the J-Rods.
Devastated. Yeah. Devastated. This was back before Welty became a full-blown Adidas hooligan, and I do think that's an important thing to bring up, because we're going to talk a lot of Adidas today.
A lot about Adidas.
All right, guys. Let's get into it. We have a great guest on today's podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
In an era where authenticity and who was and wasn't there matters, our guest on today's podcast, Sneaker Legacy, is without a blemish. As a teenager growing up in Northwest England, he was a super fan of Adidas, and later in life he would parlay that passion and affection for the brand into a job in the 90s. It was at Adidas where he would handle everything from celebrity marketing, working with a spectrum of names that include everyone from Liam Gallagher, the Beastie Boys, and a young Kanye West before any of his footwear deals. In 2020, where it seems that converging popular culture with sneaker brands is all the rage, our guest was at the center of it before tunnel picks and onstage sneaker unveilings. Though his unmatched ability to dig through the Three Stripes archive and unwavering view on things like brand loyalty, not buying into hype, and more, he would go on to create the Adidas Spezial line, a seasonal capsule that gives a nod to Adidas's archive from the 70s and 80s with an updated twist. In its 6 years of existence, it's become a favorite of serious Adidas heads like one of our co-hosts on this very show. It's our pleasure to welcome to the Complex Sneakers podcast, Gary Aspin. Welcome, Gary. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Joe. How's everybody there?
Good, good. Hanging in, you know, just day by day, you know?
Yeah, I listened to your Chris Gibbs interview.
Oh, awesome. I'm here. Thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, actually.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, it brought a lot of memories back. And it kind of got me thinking.
You and Chris go back a ways?
Yeah, well, as I was listening to it, I remember Chris coming to Paris for his first time to what was known back then as an Adidas style reference store meeting. And he came as a buyer and he was kind of all wide-eyed and excited because he'd never been to Paris before. And then listening to you guys interviewing him, thinking, wow, how far everybody's come and how much has happened and how much this has changed since how it was when I got into the industry in the late 90s.
Absolutely. And the one thing I would say is that, you know, in a lot of interviews I've read, growing up, you said that a lot of the youth from Blackburn would travel abroad to find Adidas trainers. How was, like, at such a young age, were you guys traveling abroad?
Well, I'm kind of like the second generation of that subculture, if you will. You know, we have an Adidas culture in the UK that doesn't really, it doesn't always translate that well into other countries. So I kind of came into that probably around 1980, I would say. I was probably about 11 years old, something like that. And in Blackburn, there was a generation who were just a little bit older than me. They used to do a thing called Interrail tickets. Maybe they still do them, but back then you could go to the post office, you could get a one-year passport the same day. It was like a paper passport. Get an Interrail ticket for like £100 and that would give you a month's unlimited travel around Europe. Wow. And, you know, these guys are coming, you know, Blackburn is currently one of the top 10 poorest towns in Europe. So these guys are coming from Blackburn and going to Zurich and the likes, going, you know, going into these shops in Switzerland where, you know, the shopkeepers very naively left their trainers out in pairs. And just for the record, let's get this straight. Are we going to call them trainers or sneakers for this interview?
I feel like we have to set a couple ground rules. Even with Adidas or Adidas, like, I don't know. I defer. You are our guest, so I feel like we should show you the hospitality.
Yes, you are our guest. You tell us, and we're doing that for the rest of the episode. I thought about that when I was going through this. You tell us, Gary.
I just don't want to scare off your listeners. Do you know what I mean?
No.
We could go trainers.
You know, who's this freaky English guy? We need subtitles, and he's talking about trainers rather than sneakers. I mean, you know, if I refer to them as sneakers, then just take it that I'm being polite. You know, I have to go back to my hometown and show my face and people go, what happened to you? What are you kind of trying to speak like an American for?
But I don't want to get off track because you were about to tell us how you were going to Zurich and stealing shoes out of it.
out of a naive sneaker shop owner, trainer shop owner.
The people in Switzerland and Austria would naively leave the shoes out in pairs and these guys would come back with holdalls full of shoes as well as holdalls full of leather jackets and designer clothing. And, you know, like, they were wearing like things like iceberg history. Like those guys were wearing that stuff in like 1986 before any of the kind of hip hop, like that became a thing in London in the 90s. And I remember when Iceberg opened their like flagship store in Knightsbridge, guys from Blackburn would go in there with like leather Iceberg flying jackets on. And the guys in the shop would go up to them and go, are you from Blackburn? Before they'd even open their mouths, because they had all this kind of stuff that nobody here had seen. And even the people who were running their flagship store hadn't seen. So, you know, these guys were kind of the guys who I aspired to be like as a kid, they were kind of sophisticated in their way. They were, you know, they were well read. They had good record collections. They were politicized, but at the same time, they kind of operated on the wrong side of the tracks. And so, yeah, they would go abroad and they would pilfer these products and bring them back to Blackburn. And, you know, in the 1980s, there was a recession, so there was a lot of unemployment there. But you had all these incredibly well-dressed youths wandering about wearing designer clothes and rare Adidas trainers that, you know, you just didn't see in the shops in the UK at that time. You know, you're talking about a whole different era. You know, you're talking about when shoes were made under license. So if you travel from country to country, you would see different product ranges in different countries, where now we have a much more homogenized and global look going on. You know, that's why I kind of, in a way, I like the fact that we're calling them trainers rather than sneakers, because one of the things with Adidas Special is it's very much, you know, it's got a very localized following, I guess. You know, it's got a cultish following in the UK, and yet in some other countries, people just, you know, it doesn't resonate. They don't understand the nuance of it. They don't understand the cultural reference points that go into it. But like I say, I'm kind of good with it, because when we first started doing Special, the whole idea of it was that some of the, what Adidas would describe as statement ranges, you know, some of the collabs that were selling in the fashion independents were doing really well globally. But with the Adidas culture that we have in the UK, some of those collaborations weren't resonating in the same way in the UK. So Adidas kind of, the heads of Adidas UK said to me, well, what would you do, Gary? And I said, well, give me a week and I'll come back to you. And I kind of put this proposal together for this idea of this premium archive-inspired range. And they were like, but you're not a designer. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not really a designer you need. What you need is a curator. You need somebody who has deep brand knowledge, who's able to know which elements of your archive will translate to a contemporary audience. So that was the, you know, the whole idea behind it. It was about trying to create something that's new and contemporary, but has that DNA and that feeling that I got from those products when I was growing up. It's very much about the kind of the relationship between what were essentially British youth cultures and this, what was a very conservative German sportswear brand, and the way that, you know, British youths kind of took these things and reappropriated them. You know, like the name Special in itself, I mean, that comes from, you know, one of Adidas used to make specialist sport shoes, and one of the most famous specialist sport shoes were the Handball Special, which is still in the range to this day. But, you know, like Handball Special was like a huge shoe in my hometown when it first came out, you know, like 1983, 1984, everybody had Handball Specials. Nobody played handball.
Like, you never played a game of handball in your life.
So some of these kind of random indoor court shoes that were designed, they were designed for sports that none of us would have dreamed of playing, but aesthetically they looked incredible. So we would take those and reappropriate those to the way that we looked.
Gary, one of the moments from, you know, your youth that kind of, I guess, symbolizes, you know, you knowing which sneakers were good and whatnot, as you said, when you were in university or college, as we would say it, that you were kind of like going out and getting dead stock shoes and kind of reselling them early on to help pay for everything. Like, you had the eye for it to kind of like fund.
Yeah, I didn't even, you know, I didn't see it as reselling at the time. You know, the 90s was a strange period. And so in the early 90s, Adidas came back with equipment, and then they started to do Adidas Originals. But Adidas Originals, in its first incarnation, was driven by Peter Moore. And there were only like five styles, one to represent different areas of sport. Off the top of my head, it was Stan Smith for tennis, Superstar for basketball, Gazelle for training, Country for running, and can't even think of the last one, but you get the idea.
This is the whole retro line only has room for five silhouettes.
Yeah, but you know, you've got to remember in the 90s, there was no retroing. You know, we were only just coming out of the 80s. So a lot of the stuff that had been around in the 80s was still kind of sitting in basements of kind of independent sportswear stores. And so after a few years of kind of breaking into warehouses and going to acid house parties and kind of growing our hair and kind of losing the plot a little bit, we, you know, I ended up going back to college as a mature student. So I was about 24 when I went back to college, and I was studying fashion promotion. But, you know, I had to find ways to finance getting through college. And part of that was finding old shoes and then selling them on, you know. So it was, you know, it wasn't the same kind of, you know, the dynamics were different because we didn't have the internet and you know.
How were you selling them?
Well, I found different ways of selling them to people I knew or selling them. I started selling them to shops in London. So the buyer for a shop called Browns in London started to buy shoes from me. And I would find them in, you know, there was one place in Bradford that I used to go to that claimed to be the biggest footwear store in the world. And they had this kind of back wall that was just full of old shoes. And at the time, you know, that, you know, it wasn't like athletic footwear had been dragged into the mainstream at this point. You know, it was kind of a niche thing. You know, I went to college in the 1980s and I dropped out after 6 months because I moved to Manchester in the summer of 1988 and acid house happened and I dropped out of college. But then I used to put trainers on my fashion illustrations in 1988, and the lecturers thought I was from another planet. They were like, "What? Why are you putting sports shoes on your fashion illustrations?" You know, because, you know, in the 1980s, the only people that really wore athletic footwear were kind of either sports people, hip hop kids, or football casuals in the UK. That was kind of it, really. And so it was very much a kind of an underclass thing. And it was only in the 90s that stuff started to get retro and it started to get dragged back into the mainstream. And so it just, you know, I wouldn't say it paid me through college, but it just helped subsidize me while I was going through that.
Gary, at any point in your obsession with trainers, with sports footwear, I'm sticking with trainers, man. Were there ever any other brands for you? Because I know Reebok means something in the UK. I know Nike means something in the UK. Did this never mean anything to you?
Yeah, I mean, I wore Nike shoes in the 80s. You know, I had like Nike Odyssey were the most expensive shoe on the wall in 1984. They were £59.99. And I had a pair of those. I had Nike Airborne. I had Nike Omega Flame. I had, yeah, there are photos that exist of me wearing Nike shoes. but you know, like Adidas was always my number one. You know, I've had New Balance. I was kind of, you know, but Adidas was my number one brand and the brand that I had the most affinity with. You know, I kind of, what you have to understand is that the sneaker culture, to me, is an American term.
Oh,
and, and you guys are driven by basketball. Yeah. We're here in the UK, we're driven by, shall I say, soccer or football. We're driven by soccer for the sake of your fans, but I'll call it football. And, you know, like when we got into hip hop and I was into the whole B-boy thing, you couldn't find an Adidas superstar here in the UK. They didn't exist. Mm-hmm. You know, the Adidas Gazelle was our superstar. And so it was, when we were into that stuff in the 80s, whilst we would see American kids doing that stuff, you know, we saw all the, you know, Wild Style and Beat Street and all that stuff. The things that they were wearing were not available to us and there was no internet. So it became about appropriation. And there was a lot of crossover between the way that B-boys dressed and the way that football casuals dressed. So there was a period in football casual fashion where they wore a lot of expensive European sportswear, the likes of Fila, Sergio Tacchini, Aless, those type of brands. And simultaneously, whilst that was happening, you know, football casuals were wearing that stuff as well. And you also have to remember a lot of the guys who were prominent within UK hip hop came from the football, came from a kind of football casual background. So someone like DJ Milo from the Wild Bunch was a, you know, he was into football. Goldie from Wolverhampton, he was into, you know, they kind of, the two things kind of crossed over with each other. And so, you know, but then the b-boying thing kind of died out around 1986. It, you know, whatever anybody says in the UK, it died. It died on its ass. And and that was when a lot of, you know, the early rap concerts happened. You know, I mean, I remember seeing Run DMC supported by the Beastie Boys. I saw the Def Jam tour with Public Enemy, Eric B and Rakim and LL Cool J. I was around all that stuff. But then, like I said, simultaneously alongside that, you know, I was kind of listening to, you know, bands like New Order or, I don't know, Talking Heads or, you know, like the stuff that the kind of casuals were listening to. It was a very kind of interesting time and a very exciting time. And I'm very fortunate because I was kind of the right age at the right time in the right places to witness a lot of this stuff.
So let's fast forward to the 90s. It seems like what you're just saying, you're pulling from all different references. You're establishing a crazy trainer archive. And then in the 90s, you get hired to work at the brand that you grew up loving and archiving. What was it like those early days and getting the job there? And how did that play out?
Well, just to be clear, I didn't have a trainer archive in the 80s, and I don't know anybody that did. I had I had lots of pairs of trainers, but we wore them and we wore them till they fell off our feet. Nobody collected trainers.
You never thought about
You never imagined that trainer companies would be retroing old shoes, because it was always like, what's the next technology? You know, when shoes were coming out, it was always kind of like, oh, wow, you know, Dellinger Web. Oh, wow, suspension plugs in the midsole. Oh, you know, like the first ZX range came out, or ZX, as you people would say. And it blew my mind. And then, the second ZX range comes out and you've got the torsion bars in there. And so, you know, it was like nobody collected. People just wore until and interacted with it. So I end up, you know, when I started working for the brand, that was in the late 90s. And it was just a totally, totally different landscape to what we have now. You know, there was no Adidas Originals as a division of the company. They had Adidas Originals, which was, like I say, based on five silhouettes. And then you had, you know, a very small Originals apparel range, which was kind of made up of Firebird tracksuits, really. So when I joined the company, there was no Trefoil apparel kind of available in this company, in this country at the time. The company was, it had the leftovers of Firebird tracksuits from the Britpop years, but there was Originals apparel, it was kind of over. And so I would go to these Adidas global marketing meeting looking to try and find people who worked in countries where Adidas was still made under license. So I'm like, oh, you're from Argentina, hey, here's my business card, do you want to swap some of that licensed product to yours? I'll send you some signed memorabilia from Oasis. And they'd be like, yeah, great. And so there was all, or like South Korea were making their own stuff at that time.
So that's when you started building up your personal collection once you got into the brand and you had access to the global network of different products.
But there was no way to buy that stuff internally. There was no way to do budget shifts. So the only way I could do that was to hustle it by saying, hey, do me a favor, send me four boxes of those Superstar ones from Japan and I'll get you and all your friends into the Fuji Rock Festival on the guest list.
Okay.
And that, it was kind of like, you know, it was kind of really hustly because nobody inside the company was thinking along those lines. And then on top of that, I would be saying to the sales team, hey, do you know of any sports shops that are sitting on old stock that might want to swap for new stock? And so I'd be going in with like these shoes like Falcons and Response shoes that some people want to reissue nowadays, and kind of that at the time nobody was that interested or wanted, certainly not the people I was working with, because I was working with musicians, and most of them were wanting kind of, you know, retro products. So yeah. I would be going in and into these sports stores and saying, you know, if you let me kind of clean out your basement, I'll swap you for new products. And they would be like, fantastic. And I'd be going, yay, fantastic. So then in the office, I would have this kind of whole store of old shoes. So I'd speak to somebody like, I don't know, JK from Jamiroquai or Noel Gallagher or whatever. And they'd be saying to me, they'd be saying to me, you know, I've got all the money I need, and I've got all, I don't care about getting free shoes. What I care about is getting shoes that nobody else can get. Okay. So my whole thing would be, if I was going to give them some of our new reissues, I would pepper that with bits of vintage stuff. And now I think back to some of the stuff I gave away at that time. Like, oh my God.
Oh man,
but,
I bet.
But it was kind of, you know, that was the currency. It was relationships and it was product.
One of the shoes that I guess nobody can get that you were instrumental in around the same time as you had mentioned that you were the one that kind of created the first Bape Adidas collaboration, or you were instrumental in doing like the first shoe. Like how did that happen? How did you convince Adidas to do a Bape collab? Like that was like very early on.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of jumping around a lot because there's a lot to.
It's a lot of history. Yeah. Gary, you have a lot of history, brother. We only have an hour.
Yeah. what happened was I was working on entertainment, but I was a product fiend, and around 2001, they made Adidas Originals a division of the company. So I was involved in organizing the global launch of Adidas Originals. So we did the global launch party for that in London. I was working with a lot of musicians. I had good relationships with a lot of musicians. Some of those musicians I had relationships with from when we used to do the Acid House parties in Blackburn. And so they were very accommodating and supportive to me. So I went over to Japan for the first time in 1999 with a band called the Happy Mondays, who've just done a collaboration with Palace Skateboards. And I went over there with them, and every year after that, I used to go back to Fuji Rock. One year when I was at Fuji Rock, I was in Tokyo before it, and Ian Brown invited me to go with him to the Bape store, because Ian Brown had been getting Bathing Ape products for quite a while because Nigo loved the Stone Roses. And, you know, Nigo back then had like a kind of Beatles haircut and a kind of epaulettes. And look, he looked incredibly cool, but he looked like a kind of Japanese mod. That's the best way to describe his look, you know. And so I, through Ian, I remember the first time I went to the store and they said, you know, kind of take what you want. And I didn't take anything because I didn't feel it was kind of my style. And I knew all the people who were into Bape in London. And it was a real small clique of people. It was like Fraser Cook, James Lavelle, Michael Koppelman, that group of people. And so the next time I was over there, I was introduced to Kazuki Karashi. And Kazuki was a graphic designer who worked for Bathing Ape. Kazuki loved playing football, so I used to send football kits for the Bathing Ape football team. And so over time, me and Kazuki just built a rapport and became friends. So when I'd go to Tokyo, I'd always hook up with him. And then they were doing the school tour kind of superstar looky-likeys, which I got what they were doing. It was kind of a homage to the superstar. This was before the kind of all the rap fraternity had kind of discovered Bathing Ape, really, the American rap fraternity. And so,
and you said that for the superstar, which was the collaboration, Nigo loved the superstar. That's how it came about, kind of, right? Well, that the silhouette came about.
Well, yeah. Well, they were already, like I say, doing these skull tours, which were kind of superstar looky-likeys. And I could see that was a homage. And so Adidas Japan had no connection to Bathing Ape because they were such a closed shop. You know, like they never invited anybody into the HQ in nowhere. They were just a closed shop. And we talked and we said, let's do something together. And so we did. And, you know, I was like the catalyst. The product team in Germany took it over and they developed some shoes together. And then the bathing ape, the Busy Workshop in London, launched the shoe, and it was the first time I ever saw overnight kids queuing overnight to buy Adidas shoes. And they were camped out overnight. And, you know, and it's funny because I had to get a pair of them out a few weeks ago. And on the back of the shoe, it's like one of 500. And I think one of 500, like, that was such a small,
crazy.
Like, it's just unimaginable now. Do you know what
I mean? Remember the headquarters at Adidas when I was an intern at Complex, or early in my career, I would go to the headquarters in Soho, and that shoe was like on the wall, just like front and center. And like, it was the only time I really saw that shoe, that camo superstar. It was so, so rare.
Yeah. And the thing about it was through that project that I kind of became, I met Michael Koppelman through Fraser Cook originally. Me and Fraser were friends, and he introduced me to Michael. Michael is the kind of godfather of streetwear in the UK, in Europe, really. You know, he was the guy who brought Stussy here. He was the guy who brought Bathing Ape here. He was the guy who brought Neighborhood, VisVim. He brought it all here. But Michael's kind of humble. He stays out of the limelight. You know, he does all the work. You know, he works with Supreme now. I think he does all their distribution and warehousing or whatever. But Michael's a great guy. And I've met Michael. And so we worked together on that project. And then Fraser and Michael set up a store together called Foot Patrol. And again, I had to employ a lot of my tactics that I'd done with entertainment to get product for Foot Patrol, because, you know, for a small independent sneaker boutique, why would anybody want to supply this store? Because their stock room's tiny and they want exclusive product in small runs. Well, doesn't everyone?
They're not going to do volume.
Yeah, they're not going to do volume, and it's going to upset the big boys who've got big high street sportswear chains. And so I started kind of sneakily doing swaps and exchanges to get superstar ones from Japan. I managed to get a bunch of decade laws from the US and just getting product for them, because I knew it was the right thing to do. Adidas needed to have presence in that store, because I believed that the people who were running those stores were as influential as any celebrities.
And you were totally right, because for those who don't know, Fraser Cook, who you're talking about, now he's been at Nike for decades, running their biggest collaborations, and he's the person responsible for convincing the coolest artists around the world to do work with Nike. I know you were in that same lane for a while at Adidas too. Talk about the Bape thing, and that turned into this fruitful partnership for many years. One thing that didn't really pan out, I know there was this relationship that almost happened between Kanye West and Adidas. Can you talk about how that happened? I think it was around 2005, 2006.
Let me talk about Fraser Cook before we talk
about that.
Let me talk about
Fraser. He's a quiet guy too, and I wish we had more history on the record about Fraser Cook.
Yeah, well, the funny thing was, the last time I saw Fraser, we were in the same room at the same time, was the Morwax anniversary exhibition. And me and Fraser were stood talking to them. People were pulling their phones out like, oh, my God, they're speaking to each other like we'd be enemies, because, like, you know, and I'm like, no, I like this guy. We just happen to work with different brands, you know. And yeah.
Messi and Ronaldo.
And but interestingly, with Fraser, I remember when Fraser got the job at Nike and Michael called me up, because Fraser and Michael used to come to those same style reference store meetings that Chris Gibbs used to come to, to buy for Foot Patrol. And they kind of sat me down in this restaurant in Soho in London and basically said, Gary, we've got to break some news to you. Fraser's going to Nike. And I was like, great, you know, good, you know.
You supported it.
Yeah, good, you know, and you know, nothing but respect for him. But interestingly, what I was going to go on to say was, from that Bathing Ape collaboration and from that stuff with Foot Patrol, that was where kind of Adidas Consortium was born out of. Because we had the Superstar 35th anniversary, and I put this idea forward, which was stores like Undefeated, stores like Union, stores like Foot Patrol, you know, these independent sneaker stores. At the time, you know, the big sportswear brands were only interested in volume stores. And it was kind of, and so Adidas were kind of ahead of the pack when we did the 35th anniversary. You know, we launched this consortium idea, which was an idea that I kind of dreamed up. Unfortunately, the team in Germany kind of agreed with me and shared the vision for that. And that's where that was born out of. So you know, and that in a way set a blueprint for, you know, I can see that stuff that we did back then is almost like laid the foundations for the current situation that we find ourselves in now, for better or for worse.
I want to talk about that Kanye pitch, though.
Go on, then. What do you want to know?
I'm not letting you off.
What do you want to know?
So tell me what happened. Some Adidas executives flew from Germany to LA.
No, I went and met with, I was the global head of entertainment at that time. It was before Wex worked on entertainment. Wex had been working as a salesperson. I had a great relationship with Wex. Me and him had clashed with what one particular guy clashed with both me and Wex. Wex left and went to work for another sportswear brand for a while, and then he came back to Adidas. I stayed with Adidas and kind of rolled out that situation. But I was global head of entertainment at the time, and there was talk about potentially doing some kind of collaboration with Kanye West. And so they asked me to go and see him. And one of the ladies who worked in my team in LA had a relationship with him and Don, his manager. So I went along to the studio and I met them, and he was very gracious and he was very accommodating. And when he realized that I was the guy that was instrumental in doing that first Bathing Ape collaboration, he couldn't have been nicer to me, to be honest. He was very respectful, and he was like, you know, and I remember saying to him, you know, that I'm the guy that put that together. And he was like, I like that. You're telling me you did something, you know. I'm like, yeah. And he was, you know, but he was recording an album at the time. And I was kind of sitting in the studio while he was doing what he was doing. So my job was essentially to get those guys in the same room together, not to kind of put a contract in front of him. That's as far as it went.
But around that time, at 2005, Kanye was on the Complex cover. And if I remember correctly, in the interview, he's talking about, I want to buy every vintage Rod Laver out there. Was there talks about the Rod Laver and him going back and, like, he was wearing Rod Lavers and then trying to go back and buy so many Rod Lavers? Was that part of the discussion, or did it get that far, or what?
Well, it's interesting because that was his go-to shoe at that time. But the thing is, he's like a 12. Like, you know, we had to service a lot of different people. Do you know what I mean? It's like there just weren't enough 12s in the market to satisfy his appetite. So, you know, it's like he wanted a.
You weren't going to make a trip to Argentina for him?
Well, I don't think. At that point, the license in Argentina had gone, but that's another story.
He would love that trip today, though. He would love that trip. You guys go. Like that, it seems like that is overdue for a trip today.
Yeah, but that was his go-to shoe at that time, the Rod Laver Vintage, and he's a size 12. And we tried to get him as many pairs as we possibly could, and he went through a lot of those pairs. And I met his manager Don, and his manager Don was really nice. And I know he does his own thing with Nike these days. And yeah,
Don C, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Kanye was rapping about Rod Lavers and Stan Smiths and things like that. And one central theme is that the celebrity kind of marketing. And we talk about the Stan Smiths. Like, there's a story that my co-host wrote about how Stan Smith felt cool when Jay-Z was aware of the shoe. And how, Gary, being into celebrity marketing from a past and now seeing how it has kind of progressed in a way that it's like, you know, our job is every night tunnel picks, or this one is performing here or unveiling. How do you feel about kind of like the celebrity marketing now and how it differs from back then? Think it's too much? Do you think it's just kind of a victim of progression of the popular culture and how big trainers or sneaker spaces got?
I mean, I think it was inevitable it was going to go this way. You know, what's often happened with sportswear brands is it usually takes them a while to catch up with the consumer. You know, like when I was running around when I was at college in the 1990s, picking up old shoes, you know, the people inside the brands, I don't think were really that aware of that. It's only been this last couple of decades where people like me have actually got inside these companies And you know, and slowly these, you know, these companies are, you know, it's a very, very different animal to the company I joined. I remember my first global marketing meeting of Adidas and the head of the company kind of banging his fist on things saying, this is not a fashion brand, you know, and within a few years, you've got kind of like Y3 and you've got all these collaborations happening. You know, a lot of stuff that was done in the early 2000s is now formulaic. It's now standardized. It's now expected. One of the things for me with when I started doing Spezial in 2014 was I wanted to do something that was the antithesis of that, really. Like, because I'd worked on collaborations in the early 2000s. I've been instrumental in a lot of kind of key collaborations through, you know, my relationship with Kazuki, you know, like the first neighborhood collaboration as part of Superstar 35. I'd done a lot of that stuff, and I just thought some ways it can kind of become lazy, where it's kind of like, we want to be cool, right? Find someone famous. You know, mm-hmm. like find a fashion designer quickly, make our product cool for us. And I think that there, you know, I like the idea that there's still people out there that are interested in this idea of appropriation. And I also, the thing that, and I probably sound a little bit old and long in the tooth for saying this, but it saddens me that when the value of the product is purely based on its commercial resale value, because the whole beauty of this thing that I got into as a kid was about interaction with the product. There's
wearing it till it fell apart.
Nothing makes me happier than when I go to watch football. Not that I've been able to watch it this year with everything that's gone on, but pre-COVID, when I would go to a football stadium and I would see people wearing Spezial shoes and wearing Spezial apparel, and I'm like, that's where the value is for me.
That, you don't know how many football matches Matt Welty has been kicked out of while wearing Spezial.
I know.
You don't know how many flares and beers have spilled over.
But that's really, really important. And yeah. I think that if all it becomes about is like a commodity that you're buying, like people are buying and selling art.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's, you know, I come from a working class environment where people wore these things as a kind of as a badge of honor. It mattered. All right, you know, it was part of our identity. It was part of the fabric of who we were. It wasn't just like, I've got the must-have shoe and God, it's worth this much. It was kind of, you know, we wore it and interacted with it. And I still believe that's an essential ingredient within all this. Now, there's probably some young kid laughing at me saying this right now. He's going, yeah, man, but mine's worth X amount. But, you know, I don't just want this to be an exercise in consumerism and capitalism. I want this to be something that is integral to culture.
But one of the moments, I think, too, was Spezial, for like a pop culture moment that U.S. Consumers can kind of relate to, is you've kind of taken, you know, your expertise in entertainment marketing, and you've kind of brought it over to Spezial in a way that makes sense. Like, you've done collaborations with both Liam and Noel Gallagher. So basically, you're going to bring back Oasis yourself. But
I mean, the thing is, with collaborations within Spezial, we've not done many of them. You know, I think we've been doing Spezial for probably four seasons before we teamed up with anybody, and that was, we did mm-hmm. one shoe with Noel Gallagher. We did a small collaboration with Union, and part of that was because of my friendship with Chris. Chris was wearing a pair of Spezial shoes all the time, and people, you know, kids from the US were going in Union and scratching their heads and pointing at his shoes and going, what are they? You know, because nobody had any, you know. But, you know, for me, I come from a mindset where it was like, you wanted to find that shoe that nobody else had, in that colorway that nobody else had, rather than it kind of being this prepackaged idea of there's half a dozen go-to shoes that you must have in order to be a sneakerhead, if you will. Do you know what I mean? I like the idea that, you know, when people talk about the culture, I don't see it that way. I see that there's lots of different strains of culture that this taps into. You know, what I come from, when we're talking about working class northwest of England football casuals, that's one element of culture, and that's valid. In the same way that when we did a range in spring 2017 of Special, where we worked with Chronix, you know, Jamaican reggae artist. And the whole idea of that collection, it was not a collaboration with Chronix. It was a collection that I designed, and it was about showing the parallels between the way that we dressed in the UK and the way that Jamaican rude boys dressed, because it was this idea of taking things and reappropriating them. So it was, you know, it's like,
still not big to you, though, like seeing like Liam Gallagher, like doing that shoe together and like have it be this huge, massive, like, you know, international crossover success.
I mean, it's always nice when things sell out fast. It's great. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. I like that. And it's great, you know, but at the end, you know, and that can still be exciting and that can be seductive, you know, but it's also seeing that, like I say, I want to make products that people are going to interact with. Collectibles are fine. And don't get me wrong, you know, I've probably got 3,000 pairs of Adidas, many of them vintage. I've exhibited my shoes. I have a collection, but my, you know, like I did it the other week. I managed to get hold of a pair of vintage Adidas waterproof from a guy in Russia. And I paid him £300 for them. And then he put a receipt in them and I ended up having to pay customs charges. So they ended up costing me about £450. I get them. They're a worn old pair of shoes from 1983. They arrive at my house and then I go, oh, great, I got them. And now they go into my lockup in the hope that one day they'll be exhibited. It's like, they're not even my size, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was just that thing of, I understand the thing of collectability. I understand the thing of hype. I understand the way that people get sucked in and seduced by that. But I think alongside that, there has to be, you know, there has to be some kind of interaction and wearing these things, you know. My collection is a resource for my job ultimately.
One thing that I really like that you said earlier, and kind of like you were sending celebrities the trainer of the moment, but also things that no one else had. It's kind of a thing that could not exist though in 2020, right? There's no way to find things that sneakers or trainers right now that no one else had. It seems that, to your point, artists are getting seeded basically the same 5 to 10 sneakers every few months, but it seems that you were kind of doing it a totally different way. Do you think that model could have existed or can exist now? It doesn't seem like it could.
I think it does in the UK, if I'm honest.
Okay.
I think, you know, like I say, I think the motivations and the drive of the culture here are quite different to the US. I mean, London is far more US influence than the rest of the UK is. The way that men dress in London or youth dress in London is totally different to the way it is in the north. You know, something like Supreme or Palace in the north of England are seen as kind of niche brands. Whereas to my 13-year-old son growing up in London, like my 13-year-old son, he knows about all the brands that I wear, but you know, all his friends at school, it's all about kind of, you know, skate brands like Supreme and Palace. Now, my girlfriend lives in the north. She has three kids. She has a daughter and two sons. One of her sons is 19, one of them 17. If I showed up with a Supreme box hoodie for Christmas this year, they would look at me like I've got two heads. Do you know what I mean?
Wow.
Like,
really? They would
that's
care?
Interesting.
They would not care. Whereas if I showed up with a CP company jacket, maybe like, thanks, Gary.
Wow.
Good man.
You know, it's a little like me and Matt Welty sitting next to each other in the office a little bit.
So yeah, so it's just different reference points. And that's not taking anything away from Supreme or Palace. All I'm saying is, you know, there's not a monoculture. No, there's not a monoculture.
You have the upcoming Special collection that, you know, released this past weekend. Mm. You had the collaboration with New Order. For, you know, as people who listen to this and don't know who New Order is, there's obviously that huge New Order Corruption Lies collection with Supreme. Just use it as a reference point. You, as you always post the the Spezial pictures as kind of like a teaser of all of it. There's a shoe that's hiding in the corner.
Yes. Oh, you want an exclusive?
Yeah, this guy. This guy.
Got to get a scoop before we get out of here.
All right, I'll go as far as to give you the name of it. It's the Manchester 89 SPZL. How's that? Ooh. There you go.
So you know that as you're talking about, everyone in this who's watching or listening to this, all the old football casuals, all the guys who argue with you on the internet.
Most people in America, as I said that, will just call and scratch their heads. Most people in the UK will kind of like be having street parties.
But as we know, the guys in the Facebook groups who get mad at you, you know, when all the pictures are leaked, they're like, oh, there's glue on this shoe.
Oh, don't they
fuck
ever.
You. All the guys giving you death threats on the internet over like models that you've created. They just want to know that it is an Adidas Manchester shoe that
is released. Well, just to give your listeners a little bit of background, there was a shoe that I did in the early 2000s, back in 2001, called the Adidas Manchester.
There's a lot of hype on that shoe. You hate hype, but there's a lot of hype.
But I'll tell you something interesting. When that shoe came out, we made a very small number of them, and it was because the Commonwealth Games were happening in Manchester. And I convinced the product manager at the time, I said, look, the City series of Adidas shoes, you know, flat suede training shoes that a lot of football casuals love, particularly nowadays, because they weren't actually that big in the 80s, just for the record.
Yeah.
I said, Manchester is a city that's always been an Adidas heartland, as is Liverpool. Why don't we make a special shoe for the Commonwealth Games? So we made them, and they kind of sat. They didn't fly off the shelves by any means. And as the years went by, the kudos of those shoes grew. And then in 2010, Size did a 10th anniversary, and they did a Manchester based on that shoe. And they sold really fast. And the Manchester shoes just went up and up and up in value. And so when I started seeing the crazy prices of them, I was like, you know what, this is getting silly. So I reworked the shoe, reworked the upper pattern, and did a GT Manchester. So Manchester itself, the wider area of Manchester is Greater Manchester. So we used to do shoes like Stockholm GT. Adidas would do shoes like Stockholm GT. So it was a play on that, GT Manchester, Greater Manchester, because it was greater than the original shoe that I worked on in 2001. I felt we'd improved it. And so we did those, and they literally sold out in minutes. Mm-hmm. And I felt with this drop that because we were doing the New Order shoes, because I'd originally talked to New Order about doing a Manchester New Order edition, but it's not a shoe that Bernard from New Order wears. And so he stipulated he wanted a shoe that he wears. So we opted to go with the Wilsey for the New Order shoe. But at that point, I was kind of fired up about doing another Manchester, and I had an idea for it of how we could kind of do something that would take that shoe in another, in keep the DNA of that shoe, but take it somewhere new. And so we did a Manchester 89, and I was, when people saw it, everybody was freaking out about it. All the buyers.
What color is it?
I'm not telling you anymore. You've seen the back of the shoe. But all the stockists were freaking out about how good they look. And so I said to Adidas, please, 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 the problem we have with Spezial is we drop a full collection at one, like, you know, it'll be like five shoes and an apparel collection all in one drop. So sometimes it's kind of competing against itself because, you know, the guy does... He wants to buy everything, but he's got to strategically buy because the apparel sells out so quickly. He needs to know which apparel pieces he's going to prioritize. And so often it competes against itself. And I thought if we put these shoes, drop them with the main collection, as well as a New Order story, it's too much to talk about. So let's just pull those and do them as a standalone drop later in the year. And so that's what we're going to do. And the other thing was, this has been a really tricky year because this collection was originally penned to drop in July. So it was essentially a summer collection. And now here we are dropping it at the beginning of autumn because the spring summer collection had been pushed back. that meant we had to push everything else back. So, but, you know,
everything
like,
moved.
A lot of people in America, who are, apart from a few kind of expats, will probably be like, Adidas Manchester's, yeah, whatever. But like here in the UK and Northern Europe, it will be quite a big deal, I'm sure.
There's obviously a lot of people out there for whom this is a big deal. And Welty alluded to it now. You have this group of fans that you've built up who are rabid, who are on your Instagram all the time asking you customer service questions and why this shape doesn't look better. Do you ever regret in some small way the amount of attention you've drawn on yourself by creating these products? Because you are a guy who has to kind of battle it out on social media with Adidas obsessives like yourself asking you questions.
Well, the thing about it is they say it because they care. And so I have to respect them for that. I won't take abuse off anybody. I won't take abuse in the street. So I won't take it on social media. So the first few seasons, I was always kind of very accommodating to everybody. I kind of took this customer's always right approach. And then, you know, I didn't even have Instagram until I did Spezial. Adidas asked me to set up an Instagram because I was doing Spezial. And then after a while, it just got a little bit much. And I just thought, you know what, I'm just making myself very available here. If someone's got a point of view, that's fine. If someone's abusive, they're blocked. That's simple. And you know, and I always get the kind of, you know, just my opinion, but you should have done this. And it's like
I got a lot of people like that on my IG too.
And it's cool, you know.
And I'm sure the DMs are even worse because there's one number of people in the comments, and then they want to have a private conversation with you in the DMs, and that's another level.
But the other thing is people who are saying this, a lot of them have never built a shoe and a lot of them have never designed an apparel range, and they don't know about price points. They don't know about merchandising. They don't know about volumes. They don't know about distribution. So it's just, they just imagine that I'm kind of sat there with the entire Adidas back catalog and can kind of just pick and choose whatever I feel like reissuing out of there.
Sketching stuff out like it's the late 80s in your fashion school.
They don't know about lasts. They don't know about toolings. You know, but as it goes on and the more information I put out, it's like I kind of fuel the beast because they now come back with all the kind of like all the language that people inside the industry use. You know, that ice day could be a little bit longer, and you know,
now they're the experts.
Yeah, but it's cool, you know, and you know they care about it. I think sometimes also the fact that, you know, I'm a working class kid who was a hip hop kid who went to football matches, who went to acid house parties, and they kind of look at that and go, I grew up in that era. I went to football matches. I was a hip hop kid. I went to acid house parties. I can do what he does. And they seem to forget that, like, I did 4 years at college. Like, what I did prior to college informs my work, but I went to college for 4 years. I got a first class honors degree. I worked with Adidas for 14 years before I put the idea of Spezial forward. So I had a 14-year track record of consistently delivering good work. Much of that work was quite visionary work, if I don't say so myself. And through that, when I put the idea of Spezial forward, Adidas, there was sufficient trust there. It's like, well, this guy's got a pretty good track record. This seems very, what's the word? Like it's flying in the face of everything that's happening within sneaker culture, because it's kind of, in many ways, Spezial is going in the opposite direction, because it's not kind of collaboration heavy and it's not reliant. You know, I don't measure the success of shoes by how much they're selling for on StockX.
They sell for a lot sometimes. You sold a pair of shoes for $65,000, man.
but it's kind of the whole premise of it is, you know, me being in the position I'm in, people will go, yeah, it's time somebody else did what he does. And I'm sort of like, well, I kind of created this thing. Do you know what I mean? I christened it. I named it. I built, you know, it's kind of, it's something that I have built and nurtured. And, you know, in the early days of Spezial, I remember once speaking to Peter Hook from New Order. And Peter Hook said in the early days of New Order, when they were on the tour bus, he used to reply to fan mail. And he said that he knew that every letter that he wrote, he would have a fan for life. And I kind of thought that's a very that's a great philosophy to take. And I took that approach in the early days of Spezial. But then, you know, as the following for it has grown, it's got harder to do that. Do you know what I mean? But I do put myself out there and I do stand by what I do. I'm not facelessly hiding behind customer services. Do you know what I mean? And and it's my job in a way to take risks and to try things out. And, you know, I know that when I do a leisure shoe or leisure shoe, as an American would call it.
We need a whole glossary for this episode.
I know that's going to divide opinion. I know some people are going to look at that shoe and go, wow, that looks like a shoe that my grandfather would wear. And I kind of go, yeah. And that's the point. You know, that's the point. That's why, you know, it's the same mentality as to why Rude Boys wear Clark shoes. It's this kind of, it's taking something that's, you know, almost anti-hip and kind of, putting it into new context and making it look fresh and interesting, you know?
Well, Gary, thank you so much. I know we could have went on and on. I know that your time is limited. Can't thank you enough for joining and giving us all the history. I know you made, you especially made one of our co-hosts day. This guy in the office is all we hear about you and your legacy. So it was great to chop it up with you and hear some stories. So thanks so much, man.
Thanks so much, Joe. Yeah. And thanks, Brendan and Matt. There's a lot to talk about. As I say, you know, what I did before I got into this industry kind of in many ways has informed my entire career. And, but it's really nice to be here. Thanks for asking.
We're happy to just hear a small piece of it.
Definitely, man. Thank you.
Sir. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Our producer is Dave Matthews. Our associate producer is Jasmine Plata. Sound engineering done by William Smith. Special thanks to Jennifer Stewart and Shiva Bayet. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is a production of the Complex Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.